welcome to the Unified Endurance Podcast.
Intro version two.
Take two. We had a mic problem in the first one. None of you know that, so we shouldn't have said it really. But it also reminds me we can now intro our sponsors because we didn't do that before. You are wearing the Hoka Aura recovery slide.
I am. My legs are so recovered right now.
What's happening over there?
Well, I just picked them up this morning, so I'm going to wear these after track. And I did run, I ran with Skinny. We ran 200s at close to my max effort, to be honest.
Yeah. In the slides.
I didn't run in the slides, but I thought afterwards I'm going to want something comforting to put on my feet.
Comforting.
And these are brilliant, to be honest. Absolutely brilliant.
There you go. They're like, do you remember that advert where they, I think it was like cup of soup or something, would like give people a hug? It was like a cup with arms would hug you. Yeah.
Yeah. These are like a hug for your feet.
If anyone who was watching UK TV about 10 years ago will know what I'm talking about.
It's like a foot massage.
Perfect. In the last intro that you guys didn't hear, we talked all about my track sets and where it's going, but we're bored of talking about that now.
Yes.
However, this morning I absolutely cooked myself, but I did do it alongside drinking some pH 1500 from Precision Fueling and Hydration. 1500 milligrams sodium, 15 grams of carbs. It's just about right for a 7 a.m. track set at a wet bulb global temperature of about 34.
Probably. Wet bulb. We discussed this wet bulb the other week and I went away and researched because I'd never heard that term. And it is a real thing.
It
wet
really
bulb.
Is. It is. It is. And everyone's kicking off because this weekend is Singapore, T100 Singapore.
Yep.
And they're like a couple of degrees away from it being called off.
Really?
Because the bulb's too wet and hot.
Too humid, too much humidity, too much heat combined.
Yeah.
To give the wet bulb score.
Exactly. So let's see. But they're putting the race on in the afternoon, I think. The women start at like 2:15 and the men start at 3:15.
Seems silly.
Yeah, it does.
Why have they done that? Is there a reason behind it?
Don't know.
Is it maybe for global viewing?
Could be, yeah. But let's think of athlete safety maybe.
Shoutouts?
Milano.
Milan Marathon. Steph.running took a massive bunch of people to Milan. Yeah. Huge PBs. For quite a lot of people.
Including Marcus herself.
Herself. Yes, she did. 3:10.
Congratulations.
Marcus Smith, sub 3. Cathal O'Neill.
He was not happy. 2:58 on the clock, but he had to screenshot his training peaks, which showed 2:56. What are we going with here?
You have to go with the official time.
I think.
On the timing chip.
That's what's on your certificate, isn't it?
Yes, what's on your certificate.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Cathal rolled him.
257.
30K on his shoulder.
Something.
And then sold him a dream home and off he went.
His last 500 meters, average pace, 338 per K.
Does Marcus going sub 3 give you confidence that you can do it?
Maybe. I know some of the training you put in for that. I'd have to work really hard to do it, I think.
Does it motivate you to do it?
I go through waves. I go through waves. Sometimes I think, yes, I want to have a really good crack at it. But then other times I'm like, oh, fuck it, I don't. But I think I'd want to do it at a cool race.
Like Abu Dhabi?
Not Abu Dhabi and not Dubai. That's what I think. I think that would make it, in all honesty, a little bit easier in the sense that you have some visual stimuli.
Sub three in the Middle East is not sub three in Europe.
No, I know that.
That's what you got to remember.
It's a lot. Well, their terrain was cobbled streets, tram lines. Don't get that here, but you have guaranteed
and
cool
temperatures.
Weather.
Yeah, It's hard here because you break down so much in the second half because of the heat.
Well, that's definitely a huge factor.
Abu Dhabi?
Of what happened to my, not signing, even sub three, just my marathon.
Signing you up, Abu Dhabi?
No, Abu Dhabi.
Come on.
We'll
do it together.
You pace again. Remember that one time we tried to do that? Didn't work.
That was pacing Steph.
Pacing Steph, and you had your metronome on.
Yeah, surely. That's a good pacer. Should have all bases covered.
Her hair was so humid by 10K. It was like, it just frizz.
And I'd just come back from Kenya and my white shoes were fully red carpeted.
Sam, you were like bleeding sand everywhere. Good.
Anyway, back to the precision plug.
Yeah.
Go to the show notes. You can find in there a link. Mm-hmm. We can't tell you a discount code.
We're not allowed.
Because AI listens to podcasts and then chucks a discount code on the internet and then anybody can get it.
Yeah.
So, show notes, link. Also, shout out to Simon, who came over from Ireland with his crew.
Yeah, 8 or 9 runners. Yep.
And yeah, had a great time as well, by the looks of it. Good crack, as they say.
Good crack.
Over that side of the pond. Also, good crack is today's guest. Segway. Owen, pronounced Ian, spelt E-O-I-N.
Yeah.
We had a bit of a conversation around how we pronounce his name and we went with Owen. He's far smarter than you or I. He's got a PhD.
PhD.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. And he's PhD all around the back, the spine. So today's show, if you're having back pain, which you are, because you carried Moses through the Ramadan challenge.
At upper back, yep.
Upper back pain. Well, we talk about the upper back. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about how we manage back pain, what causes back pain, different types of back pain, because there's a few different types. And he's also the owner of a company that makes a product called the BackAware Belt, which is a belt that helps you understand where your hips are in space while doing movement.
It'll be added to my Amazon cart, no doubt.
Potentially. Maybe we can get you to send you one, mate. Let's see. But it's a really, really informative show. We do say at the end, if you've got questions that we didn't talk about enough or you want Owen to go into a bit more, then please email and he will just come back on the show. He's really keen to do that. So amazing. If you've got specific questions, we can maybe make him a regular of the show, our back expert.
Oh,
that would be good. And then we can always bring him back.
We do often get quite a lot of people that have back pain, back issues, or back complaints.
For sure. And what he talks about in this show is what you might have a problem in your back, but the pain is referring out somewhere else.
Yes.
Which is also very, very common. So we talk about hamstrings, Achilles, calves, hip flexors, shoulders. This is it.
I'm excited to listen to this one.
This is the show. Will you listen to it?
I will.
Okay, good.
I listen to them all. The ones that I'm not on, I listen to. The ones that I've been a part of, it depends actually. Some of them I do listen back.
Critique.
To pick some information out of it.
Yeah.
The good guests.
Reminding yourself of your own show announcements.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fair. Good. Well, let's get into it then.
Amazing.
Ian. Owen. Ewan. I wasn't sure which one, how to pronounce it. We're going with Owen. Welcome to the show, mate.
Hi, you, Tom. Thanks, big fan of the show. So really,
now you stopped really... trying to scam me. I'm happy.
Oh, yeah. My email got I reached out to Tom and I was reaching out to a few other podcasts and someone obviously reported spam and my email was blocked. So trying to quickly communicate to Tom about, like, I don't know what the scam would be if you're on a podcast. So if halfway through this, I start talking about like transferring me money. Yeah. Just watch out.
Wake me up, please. Out of interest, mate, because we always love plugging other podcasts on the show, which other podcasts did you try and get onto or have you been on that you would maybe recommend? I'm always interested in other people's favourite podcasts.
I've been on the Carl Henry podcast here in Ireland. That's quite a big one. I did a nice one on like Run to the Top. Done 2 episodes with them. It's like a running podcast. The Scientific Triathlon was a really good podcast. Strength Running is really good with Jason. Had a really good conversation with him. I had 2 conversations with him because the first one, we did like a 60-minute episode. I knew the audio was off. Like I was telling him, it's like, I'm hearing my like reverb big time. And he's like, no, it'll be fine. And then it was ruined. So we had to redo the conversation. And then I'm very like, there's a thing called the Colby index. It's kind of like a personality thing. So I'm very good at like I like original content. So I get bored by talking about the same thing. So we just did a completely different podcast. He was annoyed. He's like, oh, this stuff we did the first time is good. I was like, look, that's gone. That's between me and you. Just do something different.
That is
so, there are a few, but yeah, if you, my name is E-O-I-N-E-V-E-R-A-R-D. I've done, I don't know, like 10 or 20 podcasts. So
yeah,
always slightly different stuff. So I do enjoy them.
You're seasoned. Mate, also tell us about yourself. You're from Ireland, I would assume.
From Ireland, I'll go very quickly. So, sport-wise, I'm into running. I'm kind of five-time national champion from like 1500, and I've represented Ireland from like 800 to 10,000 meters, sub 4 minute mile, sub 14 minutes for 5K, sub 30 minutes for 10K. So quite good at those distances. Professionally then, I'm a chartered physiotherapist or a physical therapist for our American listeners, and have a PhD in human movement and biomechanics. And that was kind of, that's my, you know, area of specialty is kind of like back pain and kind of running injuries. So I run a kind of sports Pilates course, and I've developed a new product called the Back Aware Belt.
Mm. Now, this is where I thought the scam was coming in. I'll be honest, when you emailed me, like, he's going to want me to buy a bolt load order here of Back Aware Belts, and they never arrive.
Oh, yeah. It's my money. You know what? Yeah. And I never really mentioned that because I don't, again, I always find the thing I hate most in podcasts is people like just flogging stuff. Like, you know, they just keep talking about their like every answer just comes back to this is the thing where I feel like if you give good information, people will be like, you know, people will be like, oh yeah, I'll check that out. I feel like if you constantly just ram it down people's throats, they're not going to care either way.
Now I went on and looked at the product, and I was like, right, let's see. So I come at everything from a what's the catch angle. Okay. So yeah. I'm very critical in my mindset, which can be a good and a bad thing. But I went on, I was like, all right, cool. You know, a belt that tells you when your back's in the right position. But I watched it a bit with the advert, and I saw that it caught you out. It was shown a lot of when you're going into a lot of extension in your lower back. And I was like, well, that's great. But does it catch you, into a lot of flexion in your lower back? I was like, that's great. But does it catch you if you go too far the other way? And then a clip came up where it showed that it did. And I was like, okay, I like it. Good product.
Yeah.
Which is what we're going to go into now around back pain and how that can affect so many other things in your body that you probably have no idea. You know, some of the listeners won't understand what your back actually does for the rest of your body. Because obviously your spinal cord and all the nerves running through it. But the fact that your belt to plug your product for you can catch you in both ways.
Yeah.
Which it's for people listening. Imagine you're doing most people know a cat cow exercise. When you go into the cat position, it would say you go on too far flexion. And when you go into the cow position, it will tell you you've gone too far extension, which is so important to know for reasons that we're going to get into. So great product, mate. And you don't need to plug it. I've plugged it for you. Back away.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that extra feature, that extension, I had to add. Those sensors are super expensive, and it took over a year to add that. And they were like, "Would you not start with this?" And I was like, "No, I don't give a shit. I just want this work the way I want it." So yeah, I'm glad you appreciate that, Dom.
Good on you, mate. And honestly, listeners, this is the first time we've ever spoken and met. So just to give you, this is purely organic. So mate, let's get going. I think back pain, is it like I've heard in the past, it's like the number one thing that keeps people off work, or like one of the biggest injuries, lifestyle injuries, but also sport injuries as well?
Yeah, like 85% of us will have back pain at some stage in our life. And of those, 30% of people will have like recurrent back pain. So it's something that affects so many people. Like I forget the exact stats, but yeah, of how many people are out of work, back pain is one of the highest. It's like, if you look at like cost to the employer plus surgery costs, it's in the billions as well. So yeah, it's a wow. big issue that can affect a lot of us.
And we're being quite broad with back pain, aren't we? But if you were to define back pain, what would you define it as?
Okay, well, there's kind of the NICE guidelines, which are the kind of world kind of agreed upon guidelines. So they break back pain into three categories. So you have less than 1% are like red flag back pain. Okay, so things you want to watch out for there is like if you're losing bladder or bowel control, so if you can't stop yourself going to the toilet, if you have like unexplained night pain, things that like just constantly, like I'm not talking about like it's sore going to sleep when you lie down, I'm talking about like this thing doesn't doesn't stop or no pattern to it. It's like a constant pain or unexplained weight loss in the last 6 months. So not that you're exercising more and you've lost weight, but like you are just losing weight, because those things you want to really check out, they're called red flags.
Right.
Less than 1%, but it's important to look out for. So that's one category of back pain. The second one is nerve root irritation. And that is about like, you know, that's about like 7%, 8% of back pain. So it's where the nerve root is compromised, either with like, it can be very, like a very bad disc irritation, like disc prolapse, or something is hitting the nerve really hard. And it's causing like, you know, a drop foot or severe pain below the knee, essentially. And then that's about 4%. And then about 90 to 95%, depending on the studies, is what we call mechanical low back pain. And that is back pain that is caused by the way we move, essentially, that we're in like too much flexion or too much extension. And what they've done is, now I still like categorizing back pain in terms of like disc, facet joint, SI joint as the main three, but they don't like that anymore. They like just saying this, like they don't want people being like, this is exactly what's causing your back pain. They want you have a flexion intolerant back, which would mean that like you, when you're in a flex position for a long time, that's what causes your back pain. If you're in an extended position for a long time, or that's what causes your back pain. So that's the way it's the three that are categorized. One thing I would say there on the disc is people might be like, well, I have sciatica, or I have pins and needles down my leg. If it doesn't go below the knee, it wouldn't be that nerve root irritation. Okay, so usually with that, you're talking about, like, again, that you're kind of slapping your foot off the ground, that like the pins and needles is coming down like past the knee into the calf, into the foot. Because if you can imagine, what's happening there is that the disc is coming out, it's hitting the nerve. And if you can imagine like a little bell ringing, if it's hitting it so much that that ringing is going all the way down the leg, it's really pushing out at it. Okay, so I have fixed people who have that below the knee, but at that stage, that's like you need to really get this looked at or seen to. And generally, that's the indication where you might need surgery.
Mm.
So they're the three categories. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And I can really vouch for the for that bit you're describing about below the knee. And anyone who's known me for a while will know that as kind of a running joke between the coaches here, but I had an Achilles problem for 2 years, about 2 years ago. And it really did last for 2 years. And I did every Achilles rehab program you could find.
Yeah.
I did every calf rehab program you can find. I saw 8 different specialists. I even had a saline solution flushed up my Achilles to clear out scar tissue, and none of it was working. And what fixed me was a lady in America. We did online consults. We did 8 sessions together, and she is a trained chiropractor, but she is a kinesiologist. And I saw her come up with she put on YouTube this thing about fixing Achilles tendinopathy through, it might not be your actual Achilles. It could be your lower back. And I thought, well, I've tried pretty much everything. Yeah, let's try this. Dr. Sarah, massive shout out to her. I still email her regularly after I finished runs feeling amazing, because I'm like, I'm so thankful for her.
Yeah, that's amazing.
She fixed me in about 2 months with lower back protocol strengthening and not a single bit of Achilles, calf, or foot rehab.
That's amazing. Now, as I said, I feel like a lot of times with the Achilles, I know we're going to talk about that, people do overemphasize the Achilles, but I had that with another patient with plantar fascia pain. They did a nerve, they did a, like a block on the nerve. Basically, they I sent her to a consultant here in Ireland who, same thing, were like, look, it's probably not a foot or Achilles issue. And like, I mean, she was getting the shock wave, everything on this. And then he just put it like a block. It basically increased the blood flow from the, like, a thing that was caught, opened that up, it was gone. It was yeah. Crazy, yeah. So it's funny how these things can come down, like, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to have experienced it to really understand, or have, like in your case, put someone through it to really understand how this works. And even now, I'd still do the the three exercises that I did religiously with her every single day.
What were they?
Deep squat hold.
Yeah.
Deep squat hold. A tailbone tuck focused deadlift.
Yeah.
And then either it sometimes switches. I either do another weighted squat hold, so really opening up the lower back around the tailbone, or and this is why I asked you, what do you think of old Dr. McGill, a McGill bird dog or the McGill crunches?
Yeah, love them. Yeah. And like, we can talk about it here if you want, or we can talk about it later, where it's like, it, like you alluded to it there. The anterior pelvic tilt is like so underlooked at for lower limb issues.
Yeah.
So, like there's new stuff out by like, I'm going to get his name wrong on, Matiguchi, but basically he does a lot of hamstring issues with soccer players, and they found like that the tilt on the pelvis puts a massive strain on the hamstring. And if you can think of like, we learn muscles that like they're, oh, here's their origin, here's their insertion, but we kind of know from these fascial chains that like we have this kind of basically like cling film that goes the whole way up the body. So like muscles kind of work in tandem together. You know, it's not just one contracts on its own, the other contracts. So if you are very tilted at the pelvis, so if you're tilted forward, well, that's putting a strain on everything else all the way down the body. So like from the foot, everything is on like overly stretched. Mm. So if you can then correct the pelvic tilt, you're giving like a natural slack, a natural like a length back into the actual like hamstring and back into the calf, which is putting less stretch on an Achilles. Because if you can imagine, if you have a rope, if the rope has a little bit of give in it, if the two sides are closer together, well then I can flick the rope and it's not going to like fray. If I have that rope held really tight on both ends and I start flicking it in the middle, that's going to start fraying very quickly, you know. So as you said, fixing that, it sounds like really fixing that that pelvic tilt issue, getting used to that is working way, way better. And again, I'm looking forward to talking about more about that, because I feel like a lot of the protocols on, I obviously see a lot of running issues, and a lot of the protocols on Achilles or calf are just like so misinformed. It's all off that one kind of study by Anderson, and it just needs to be tempered.
Heel raises. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, mate. It really opened up my mind, and it changed the way I coach as well. Certainly changed the way I PT with people. The first thing I do is go through what I call it core alignment. So I try and get their alignment checked. So can you lie down flat with your shoulders back, with your lower back into the mat, with your head in neutral position? And then can you breathe? Like some people get in position and they cannot breathe like that. But I've just jumped ahead a bit. Let me just pull you back to, you said something there called anterior tilt of the pelvis. If you were to break that down into really basic terms, what is anterior and posterior tilt of the pelvis?
Okay, so the pelvis is obviously what connects the lower limbs to the back. When we have our pelvis, what it should be is like, if you can think of your belt line, you know, so if you put on a belt on your trousers or tracksuit bottoms, whatever, that kind of belt line, essentially what we want is the back and the front of that belt line to be level. Now, and what an anterior pelvic tilt is where the front of the belt line, so if you can imagine then the pelvis being like a bucket, if the front of the belt line is down, so the back is up, and if that was a bucket of water, the water would flow out forward. Anterior is the front of the body, so the water would flow out forward. That then means that's an anterior pelvic tilt. That's kind of the most common one. So if you can imagine then, if that isn't level, if that's tilted forward, the back is up more. So everything connected to that on the back is going to be in a little bit more of a stretch position, and the back is going to be arched. And Mendiguchi is the man's name. Jordan Mendiguchi does a lot of work with Premier League soccer teams. And his research is looking at like, well, a lot of them have this anterior pelvic tilt. And what we want to do is, if we can correct that pelvic tilt, it allows muscles to be in more of an optimal length and not overly stretched. So a lot of people are in that and then they can't breathe. Now, one caveat to that is important, is that like your static posture isn't a big deal. Like I naturally have an anterior pelvic tilt. You're going to see a lot of runners having an anterior pelvic tilt. They're going to be kind of moving forward. That's not the issue, you know, and again, so it's not a thing of like, okay, we just have to fix your static posture the whole time. The issue is where you can't get out of those positions. Like I have a thing where your body wants to be healthy. Your body wants, it doesn't want to get injured, you know, and it has amazing capacity from, you know, millions of years of evolution, to adjust and get out of these positions. What happens is, if you are literally stuck in these positions, then you have an issue. Okay, so if you have it where you can't actually ever get out of anterior pelvic tilt, I don't know if you know rugby, Tom, you probably do, but maybe for your guests, like, obviously it's a very physical sport but you'll see people in a mall or when they're all kind of like on top of each other and there's someone getting pinned. The other guys are coming in and trying to push everybody forward. If a guy has his shoulder fixed, but he can kind of squirm it or move it as the thing moves, he's in no big issue. Okay, so he's in a poor position, but he can move it out of the way. The problem is when that is fixed and then the movement comes, we get like dislocations. And it's the same with like an anterior pelvic tilt. Like if you can get out of that position, if you can move out of that position, I'm not worried about you being in a static position to start with, because I think that the body will naturally, you mightn't even notice it, but if it's getting sore, it'll be able to get out of that position. The problem is when you're stuck in these type of positions, when they're the only patterns you have, well, then you have no movement capability. So I think the thing you're doing is excellent, Tom, where you're starting with people and just to see, do they have that capacity to move out of that position? Because subconsciously, then they'll be able to get into positions that will take pressure off that.
It's pelvic control that's important, right? It's having control of all the areas you can reach and never I call it living on the chocks, where if most common, as you're saying, anterior tilt, where your back is in a lot of extension and you can't get any more extension, but you're living there, then you're in trouble. Because when you do need more extension, as you just said, like the shoulder analogy, then you haven't got it and hopefully not your lower back break, but something's going to get a lot worse, or like potentially move a disc or rupture a muscle or something like that.
Yeah, 100%. And in your case, say, if you were stuck in anterior pelvic tilts, if you need more extension, that's going to be an issue. And if you need less extension, if you need to like tilt back into that, so the ability to control the pelvis, like, you know, obviously with the back aware belt, a misconstruction can be misconstrued where it's like, oh, it's all about neutral spine. It's not, but it's important that we can have, as you said, that pelvic control. And if we can have that in the optimal position first, then we can move into like the more like extreme ranges. But especially if someone has back pain that's caused by like, say, excessive flexion or excessive extension that's causing the issue, it's important that you give them the capacity to get out of that. You give them the work on the ability to control that position. And when they can control that first position, then you can move them back into the actual ranges.
Yeah. And I also like to bring this over to swim, bike, run, because our listeners will be doing one of those three or all three. If you're swimming, let's say you're doing a 1 hour swim session and you haven't got good pelvic control, you will be swimming most of the time in back extension.
Yeah.
Now, when you move that over to open water and you suddenly have to lift your head to sight forwards, which puts you into further extension, and you don't have the ability to go into more extension in your lower back, then you will find extension elsewhere, either through your neck or through your shoulder girdle, or your legs will just sink. So you're not optimal body position in the water. So it might not be you're doing damage in the pool as you're training, but when you move that into a more unpredictable environment, you suddenly have, that's why you want to have the range and be sat more, I would call it, in the middle, or keep the water in the bucket rather than having it spilling over the front. And the same comes with cycling. If you're cycling around a long time in extension and suddenly you hit a bump and your spine wants to move, because that's what the spine does. It helps protect the spinal cord. And so when something causes a shock on either end of your body and you want to go into more extension, which should be able to happen, but you're already on your limit, you're going to get pain, or you're going to start extending your neck further. And it's the same with running. Each time you're landing, there actually should be a little bit of movement in your pelvis, right? That's how we absorb and then reuse the energy that we're creating when running. And again, if you're running in constant extension and your body can't absorb anymore because you're on what I call the chocks, or on your limit of anterior tilt, then all the other bits you said, mate, about the in your posterior chain getting tight and that piece of rope fraying, that's just going to continuously happen little by little over time.
That's fantastic, Tom. That is actually honestly fantastic. Yeah, I love that. And I love the swimming one exactly, because as you said, we can be functionally dysfunctional. Like, we're in a pool and we're kind of getting away with things, but then we go to something a little bit harder. I see it completely where people are functionally dysfunctional. They're getting away with, like, say, 5K training, and then they move to half marathon or marathon and everything falls apart because they don't have that capacity, you know, or they move to that open sea swimming and they don't have the capacity. That's beautiful.
Interesting. Yeah. So, mate, how did we, I mean, is this new? How did we get to being in a point of anterior tilt so much? And like you said, 85% of people with back pain, maybe it's not through pelvic tilt, but I must see two or three people a week, mate, who either just running, or I'm seeing them here in the gym who have, they're on their limit of pelvic tilt. How did we get there? What's some of the causes, do you think?
Well, definitely sitting. If you think about it, sitting is going to get two things. It's going to get, like, flexion of the lumbar spine. So it's going to put us into, like, that flexion, which is really going to, like, irritate the discs. And then it's also going to cause, when we're standing, an anterior pelvic tilt, because when we're sitting, it's the hip flexors on the front here that attach to the front of the pelvis that are getting very tight. So if, like, I'm going to grab here, if I grab on my front here and I'm trying to come up, that bit is getting restricted. So it's like, it's that front pelvis, it's the front pelvis, it's the hip flexors that are getting in a shortened position because we're sitting so much. So one thing I like is, like, when we're sitting, micro breaks are massive. So for disc issues, I always have, like, maybe a rolled up towel or something in the lower part of my back, just to keep it in that kind of natural, like, lordosis, that natural inward curve that we should have, so that we're not always in a flex position. But second, then, if we can stand up, like, 1 minute for every hour that we're sitting, walk around. And then some people, like, it's like, look, that's not possible, I'm in a desk. What I do is come to the edge of the chair and just drop one knee down. I'm doing it right now. You don't even realize. That's then lengthening. It's like a hip flexor stretch, essentially. You know, we're one leg is down, and I'll hold that for 2 to 3 minutes, lengthening out that hip flexor. Because if you can imagine, if we're talking about the pelvis being tilted forward, the muscles on the bottom front are the ones kind of getting pulled down, and they're the ones get super tight. So again, if we can kind of lengthen them or stop that chronic shortening of them, it should really help.
Yeah. And if you can't find a minute every hour, we need to have a different conversation about the life.
Exactly, I know. But say if you, people will be like, oh, I'm working. If you can't shuffle to the edge, the front edge of your seat, drop one knee towards the ground, bring the other foot, bring the foot behind you. So look up, like, hip flexor stretch, and then work from there. It doesn't change your position at all, but it can make a massive difference.
You can stay on Minecraft. And mate, I think, who's it? Kelly Starrett, I think he says, the best position is your next position, which is, like, his way of saying, just keep moving. So even if you're sat with your left leg crossed over your right leg for 2 minutes, and then you switch your other side for 2 minutes, like, people say, oh, don't sit with your legs crossed, but it's like, it's fine, do that, and then just make sure you switch it. So just keep moving.
100%, yeah.
It's going to help to keep the muscles around your hips just a little bit happier.
Yeah, that's really good.
One thing,
usually I get all the clips on this, but I feel like I'm going to be taking some of your clips, Tom. They've been good. You've had a couple of goals.
We'll get you to repeat them at the end.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just steal them.
Something you definitely know more than me about is this first hour of the day and why that's most important with sciatica and back pain. And I hadn't actually thought of this before, really, but why is the first hour of the day so important?
Okay, so if you have a disc bulge, which essentially is like, you know, a little tear in the outside of the disc, so the kind of more kind of jam bit in the middle is pushing out and hitting the nerve, and that can cause that sciatica into the bum, it can cause that pins and needles down the leg, it can cause like spasm into the back. If that is the thing that's causing your back pain, what you're going to find is you're worse in the morning. So I have loads of patients who can't put on like shoes or socks in the morning or just really stiff, because when you lie down, the discs take on extra fluid because we're not like standing, we're not compressing down. So they basically, the space allows to open up. The fluid gets more into the discs. So then when we stand up, that disc is essentially bigger. So if you could imagine, if you had like a 3/4 filled water bottle, and then at night you fill it up to completely to the top, any pressure on that water bottle, any squeeze is going to cause the water to come out. So that's what's happening in the first hour. If we think that like with the disc, it's the inside of the disc is pushing out, hitting the nerve. Well, if there's extra fluid in the disc, any increase in pressure is going to cause that. So what we want to do is we want to reduce the fluid in that disc in the morning before we lift heavy, before we go sit in the day, especially if that's causing it. And that can, you know, we have a saying in Ireland, it's called, the Irish is too smart Latin hibra. It means a good start is half the work. And with disc pain, that is so true. Like reducing the fluid in the disc in the first hour in the morning can make a massive difference, because what you're doing is by reducing the fluid. Now imagine your water bottle analogy. If it's only half full or 3/4 full, I can press on that without fluid, like without water spraying out of the bottle. Whereas if that's completely full, the amount of pressure I can put on that is so much less before like the water comes out.
Interesting. So actually fluid, is the fluid good or bad for us? Or it's good
it's
in a
good
way?
Or bad. It's just, but yeah, it keeps things lubricated and all, but it's just that it's bad if you have a tear, because essentially there's a way of getting the thing out.
Right.
So it's good because it's a shock absorber, but we're basically what's happening. This is a bit, I'm like this. It's all a bit over the place. So hopefully people maybe listen to it twice, give it a like. What's happening basically is there's three systems that we have to support our body. There is the passive system, which is like the disc, the ligaments, the joints. It's called passive because you don't have to do anything. It's just there. It's giving you support. So when we say, is the fluid good or bad? What the discs are doing is they're allowing absorption of compression forces. Okay. So yes, it's like hydraulics in your car. It's important that you have that fluid to kind of bounce up on that. But the other two systems are, the second system is the muscular system. Like the muscles should be kind of switching on to support that. So when we have to absorb that force or pressure, it's the muscular system that should also be working in tandem with the passive structure to give us that support. And the third system is the one we kind of talked about already, is the nervous system. It's that awareness of, if we're in a bad position, can we kind of move into a good one? Or it's the thing that tells the muscles, okay, you need to switch on now and then relax off now. So in general, yes, the passive system is good and it needs to work. But if you have a tear in the outside of the disc, what's happened is that's just been overloaded. The passive system is working too much because the active system, the muscular system and the control system, the nervous system, is not working the way it should. So we want to reduce the fluid in the disc in the morning. We're not going to reduce all of it, but what it does is it nearly allows that to heal. And then another element has to be the core stability work that you're doing, the getting those other systems working. So it's a kind of two-step approach. The first is, as Stuart McGill calls, we need to stop picking the scab. We need to kind of stop irritating the issue, and reducing the fluid in the disc will help that. We're not going to get rid of all the fluid. We're just that extra quarter, just to kind of reduce how much pressure is getting pushed out so that the disc can kind of heal. And then we need then to work on the getting the other systems working to take pressure off those passive systems.
Nice. Then, so what's the magic? What's the morning movement medicine?
Yeah, well, okay. So cat camel is really good. Be careful with the camel part. Do not go into pain, because obviously you're rounding your back. So just moving, like arching your back down, coming up and not coming up into any pain, just like, but you might barely come up. Lying on your stomach, doing like extensions. So like a press up, keeping your hips on the ground, doing that like 10 times. And then power walking. I have like oatmeal or porridge, we call it here. I'll put that on for say 90 seconds. I'll open the door and I will just like swing my arms. I'll walk swinging my arms from the microwave to the front door and back again for the 90 seconds. Swinging the arms is really important, because from your glute to your shoulder, there's like essentially like an X or a support across there. So if you can imagine from one glute, from your left glute to your right shoulder, when they're in tandem, you're basically putting a stretch, and that's like one kind of rope. And then the other side has another rope. And what that does is, one, the walking reduces the pressure. Two, the swinging of the arms, like a power walk essentially, helps put that X and that support. And that's something that people should be doing. You know, if your back is very bad, say when you're sitting a lot, doing the little micro breaks, like standing every hour, having a little support in your back is really important. And then maybe like at lunchtime, power walking for 5 minutes. In the morning, power walking for 5 minutes. Or even like 2 minutes or something, just doing a little bit. Yeah. And then in the evening, and then that can make a massive, massive difference over time.
Yeah, I like that. Power porridge.
Power porridge, I love it. Yeah, that's good, yeah.
So essentially what you're saying, wake up and then start moving your spine in every way in which it's designed to move. And that will help clear the fluid.
But don't go into pain. That's important there.
Right.
Because if you're doing a cat camel, when you go up, if you can imagine, it's the flexion, it's the constant rounding of the back that's the kind of issue.
Yeah.
So if you kind of, when you're doing it, just go into, back pain is very simple. It's like, do the things that cause less pain more often till it calms down.
Okay.
Like, and a lot of people overly complicate it, because look, you have long-term adaptation and stuff where, look, if you constantly do it and it's not painful, like it's no big deal. But there's a lot of controversy over some really common sense, simple things. I just think it's just a bit nuts. But just don't do things into pain. Yeah, and you'll be fine.
Yeah,
and do things that don't cause pain, and you'll be you're going to fix a lot of problems.
Don't touch the big red button.
Yeah, do you know? Yeah, because the other theory out there then is like, well, if you keep touching the red button, eventually your body gets used to touching it, and that's fine. But if something is irritated initially, it needs to be desensitized. It's like there's a, like I was actually just chatting to my wife about this. I don't know why. It was that patient. She's like, oh, you probably know all the sore points if you had to torture someone, you know. But I was just then talking about, you know, Chinese water torture, where it's like, if they have like, you know, just a drop of water on like certain spots, and then after a while, there's no damage to you, but it feels like a sledgehammer. That's kind of how I find with the back. It's like you need to desensitize it first, get it healthy, get that pelvic control, get that like back control. And then you can start adding in the capacity to either side of that. But you first need to stop irritating the area, so it desensitizes. It's not, you know, if I keep hitting my thumb with a hammer, it's just like little touches after a while. If something's bruised and you hit it, it's really sore. Now, if you leave it time to heal, then you can try build up an appropriate load. But if you're in pain, that's not the time to just keep irritating the area. And that's a lot of the conventional wisdom for rehab that I just think is completely crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. It's like, I think the most common thing there would be someone saying, okay, I've got lower back pain. Okay, your core's weak. Let's do plank. And then they hold a plank in bad extension or in anterior pelvic tilt. And yes, okay, you're working your core, but you're actually building strength in what's causing you the pain in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And like you see it with people, you know, I'm not saying there's not a place for them. I don't do them, but like, you know, Jefferson curls, people holding weights. It's like, okay, you got pain because you're in constant flexion. Like you, when you sit a lot, when you round your back, that's what causes you pain. And it's like, okay, well, a lot of times you get people who are 25 and they're doing these Jefferson curls with no pain. It's like, yeah, well, of course you're okay because your muscular system is controlling that. Mm. Like you can do anything. You see, strongmen, they're in completely rounded positions, but they're locked into that position. Their spine does not move as they go. Even like a lot of poor deadlifts, if you look at the spine, the lower back isn't moving that much at all. They're in a rounded position, but it's locked into that position. And then a lot of the movement's coming from the upper back, which there's no issue with because the discs aren't bigger there. So you're not really going to get a rupture of your disc there. If you have the muscular system that can control the movement, there is no issue. The issue is sometimes then for Instagram or for things, we want to show these extremes. And it's like, that's not 90% of the population that you're dealing with. 90% of the population you're dealing with don't have sufficient core control in any range. So it's like, if we're going to start with some control and start with muscular, you know, like we're all saying about 90% of the same thing. And I think that's what the common person needs to hear. Do your core, like get good control, understand where your range is, improve the strength of the muscles, getting better movement at your hip and your upper back. And if they're at 90%, then they come down and discuss the differential 10%. Mm. But we're all obsessed with, because say you and me, Tom, have this foundational knowledge, we always think, oh, everybody knows that. So we'll just debate this 10% difference. It's like, oh, well, I don't think the neutral spine is important. Or I think developing range through the full, like developing movement through the full range is important. And it's like, yeah, they're both important. But just remember the first bit. Like, remember, if you're talking to someone who's completely stiff through their hips, who has no, can't even move their pelvis. And then if they move their pelvis, can't control it in certain different positions. That's going to be important.
Low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Before we just put everyone on the reverse hyper.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mate, before we, I want to move up to, we've spent a lot of time in the lower back, which I just want to finish on there as well. It's something I've seen a lot of, and I wonder if you're seeing it as well, particularly in women with either lower leg issues or some lower back pain. Another one of the issues, and I know you said you don't mind about sort of standing posture, but I say women because of footwear in terms of high heels.
Oh, yeah,
seems to put girls into to more of an anterior pelvic tilt. And also just the kind of stance or their posture, which I call tits and teeth, which is like basically trying to stick your ass out and put your tits up. And that, sorry if I've offended anyone there, but this kind of posture of what people see, and I, you know, don't spend a lot of time around the fancy places, but I'm like, that seems to be something that's being learned. And I just look at, say, pictures and how people stand in pictures, which is like, look chest proud, look tall,
yeah,
smile, head up, or, you know, wearing stuff with high, maybe some men out there wearing high heels as well. Sorry, don't mean to discriminate against you. But then that's shortening the posterior chain, but also loading you forward, which again goes into anterior pelvic tilt. And I know what you're saying, static posture doesn't matter too much, but when you're walking around and you're seeing these things, are you also thinking that as well?
Yeah, and I think what's really important there, again, when I say static posture doesn't matter, it's important to remember that the ability to get out of any of those static postures is important. So you doing that for a picture is fine as long as you can move out of it. Like, you will have problems. You have a lot of problems in people in standing as well, because a lot of times the muscles are just overly working, and then that can cause a lot of compression on the it's like what we call shear stress on the back, and that causes like the joints to kind of get very irritated. So it's important that, again, if we're in these positions, that you can get out of them. Because what I mean with static posture is sometimes if someone has control, visually you mightn't see that they're able to move out of it, but like internally, if you saw like the slight movements, they'd be able to kind of move their body in a way that might get them out of that position. But it is really important that you don't overly, yeah, as you said, people learn in these positions, and that's when people get in like the most trouble. Like I remember I really hurt my shoulder by doing press ups where I was like squeezing the shoulder blades together. It's the worst thing you can do. It's literally the worst thing you can do. The shoulder blade will not move in its normal way, and I developed an impingement then in that shoulder. So where people are trying to learn these positions, it's like always be able to do the opposite. So if you're in this position, like you were saying there, can you curl the other way then, just to make sure that you have that kind of available movement?
Yeah. And I will move over and I say compliment the men here. I work out of obviously a CrossFit gym, and so we see a lot of workouts that have a lot of movements in. And for example, when I see someone going from like a deadlift position or a snatch and then going over and doing like double unders or into a run, and yeah, it makes me really think, oh, that's danger, because again, it comes back to being in control. But a lot of people are deadlifting, snatching, pressing overhead with loads of lordosis, which is anterior pelvic, yeah, tilt, right? And then that starts to feel normal, and then you go over to like a compressing movement such as running or yeah, double unders, and it's just compounding on that area. So it comes back to what you're saying, is it's okay to be there, like you see some strong men in that position, but they have control of being able to go back or the other way when they go to a different movement.
Yeah, and that nervous system, like if it's Punjabi in 92 did this, like it's that passive structures that we're using, it's the muscles, the muscular system, and then it's the control system. So like even if someone's struggling, maybe as you said, maybe instead of like a kind of superset, maybe they tri-set it, where it's like you've got your deadlift or your hand cleans, and then go into kind of some maybe like core exercise that kind of you have to arch, extend, find the middle, and then just, you know, even like Superman or just something that allows you to go get that like dialed in awareness, and that gives your body like the building blocks then to run effectively. Like, because what I don't want people doing is trying to change their running technique per se. What I like to do is give people the building blocks subconsciously so that their body will work out the best way. But as you said, if you've programmed yourself to be in this extended position, and then you go to more of a compressed of exercise, that could be an issue. Where if you go for extended into one that like maybe works the other way or that control, then your body will probably work out the best way to run for you.
Excellent. So before you put your high heels on or go and deadlift, women and men, do some flexion exercises, some dead bugs, some deep squat holds, and you'll be fine.
Exactly.
That's what we've got.
Yeah.
Good. Mate, let's go up, because another big thing around posture is upper back and kyphosis, so the rounding of your upper back.
Yeah.
Which can have quite a big effect on your lower back.
100%. Right?
So can you explain the relationship there between our upper back and lower back?
So I think the best way that this, there's been loads of people like Shirley Sharman, Vladimir Yanda, like throughout the years, the Kendalls who didn't like the normal posture initially, loads of people have come across this idea. But the people I think who've explained it the best would be Gray Cook and Mike Boyle. And they call it the joint by joint approach. And what essentially it was is that every joint has one primary function, to be either mobile or stable. Okay, and they're all stacked opposite each other. So the arch of the foot, that should be stable. You know, so if you think, what's the main problem here? Flat arches. The ankle should be mobile. Okay, so we should have good range of motion in our ankle, because we see problems there is like people are stiff through the ankles. The knee should be stable. It's a hinge joint. It should only really move in flexion and extension. What is the issues we see there? You know, valgus, people buckling in or not being able to not control the knee. the hip is a ball and socket joint. It should be mobile. The lower back then, it should be stable essentially. Again, there's not like, there's about 4 degrees of rotation in each lumbar spine. The upper back, the thoracic spine, should be mobile. That's where the rotation really should come from. That's where the extension should come from. The neck, kind of like C7 to C2, should be essentially like stable. The top two are mobile. The shoulder blade is stable. The shoulder joint is mobile. The problem comes with modern living. We tend to see a reversal of that, especially reversal of the mobile areas becoming stiff. So the hip gets stiff. We've talked about like our sitting and reasons why that might occur. And then because that's stiff and the upper back gets stiff, we're in these like hunch positions. And because they are stiff, your body, you said it as well, that your body is like with compensations, you will always be able to move. If we have someone in the water, there's no way that they won't be able to get their head up out of the water. That just won't happen. They won't drown themselves because they're not moving in the right position. But what they'll do then is move somewhere that's not really designed for movement. So as a physio, I see so much more knee pain and low back pain than I do hip or thoracic pain, because those areas aren't moving. So you're not going to get major issues until they're big issues. But you're going to get a lot more issues in the back, lower back, because it's moving way too much. And you're going to get a lot more issues in the knee because it's moving in ways it shouldn't move. So when we're correcting the upper back and the hips, it's because we need to restore movement where we should naturally move. And then that allows us to be stable where we naturally be stable. Because as I said, we're not evolved that much from cavemen or cavewomen. So our primary function is always be able to move, to get food, to protect ourselves. So I could do 3 hours of core stability on my lower back. But if, say, there's $100 on the ground, if I can't actually like push my hips back to move through my hips, or I can't kind of move except correctly through my upper back, I will just switch off those core muscles I was working on and move like I can through my lower back.
Mm. So where, again, back to how are we developing these bad patterns? Why are we seeing more upper back issues or poor posture in the upper back? Is it just because we're not moving in the right ways anymore?
Yeah, again, like everything is very forward facing. So like we're on our phones, we're hunched over, you know, we're sitting, we're kind of rounded, we're looking at the screen. So we're doing things for like 10 hours a day and wondering what's the issue. Like people kind of know the reasons.
Yeah, I'd hope so. And as well, I think, again, I've also, you know, I'm sure you have as well, experienced tight upper back. And people sometimes think jumping on a foam roller or going for a massage or seeing a chiropractor, you know, and just hearing some clicking, feeling something move over it, which, you know, makes things feel like they've realigned and things. But actually what's going to fix it is movement, because it should be moving transversely in your upper back, right? Twisting, being able to go forward, backwards, side to side.
100%. 100%. Okay. But I don't necessarily mind that. Like I like foam rolling, or I like, you know, you could get a manipulation, but I sometimes call that like reset, reinforce, reload. There are things you can do to reset, give you like a window where things will move a little bit freer. But if you don't do anything, like how often have we foam rolled or even done something and we're moving nicely? But it just goes back to what it was before, because what you've done is given yourself a window where you then need to like reinforce that new movement. So you need to do things like, and what I find is 5 minute holds to 10 minute holds. This 30 seconds, it doesn't work, but like 5 minute holds, like even for like hamstring stretches, my hamstrings, I just put my legs up close to the wall and hold. And you'll find if you hold that for 5 minutes, it is a different sensation than holding for 30 seconds. And it's the same thing. If you like, I call it a butterfly. So I sit as close to the wall as possible. So I'm right on my ischial tuberosities, my sit bones. I have my feet in a kind of like groin stretch position. I'm right up as close to the wall as you can get. And then I'm trying to like lift and have my eyes looking straight ahead. So the crown of my head is getting pulled up tall. So I'm going into that upper back position, and I'm just sitting against the wall for, say, watching TV 5-10 minutes. What you'll find is that, like, the first time, try 2 to 5 minutes initially. After like 90 seconds, you're going to burn it. It's going to feel like, oh my God, this is going to break. Something like, with these areas that are tight, but it takes that for the Golgi tendon organs to just relax, to let go, and realize this is okay. And then if you're doing mobility work, remember, you got to move something 30 times. You can do it like 2x15. So say if you're doing like extension, so you're in all fours, you have like your right hand on your neck. Now, make sure we're not cranking at our neck. We don't want the neck, the lower neck, to move excessively. We just want the head to be in line with the upper back, belly button's in, so we're keeping the lower back kind of contracted, and we're just rotating as much as we can with the upper back, and then touch elbow to elbow, rotate around elbow to elbow, and doing that like 15 times, switch the other side 15 times, switch back 15, switch back 15.
Oh, and you said one of my favorite things then, Goglio tendons, incredible things. Can you explain what they are and why they need to be sometimes switched off and when we actually need them to be switched on?
So there's two things that kind of work in tandem, muscle spindles and Golgi tendon organs. So the Golgi tendon organs, what their primary role is to prevent tearing of tendons and muscle. So where you see them a lot is if you are holding a really heavy load, if people can imagine this, this probably happened. They're holding something super heavy, and all of a sudden, it's like their body is just like, let go of this. Same if you're holding something super hot. So there's a reflex that's been sent to the spinal cord to tell the body, drop that. Because what it's thinking is, this is too heavy. If I keep holding this, I will tear this muscle. So it you're holding something super heavy, and it's nearly like a reflex. You just let go of it. That's what the Golgi tendon organ's primary function is. It's to allow that to switch off. Okay, so when we do resistance training, a lot of the strength gains for the first 8 weeks are essentially like refining that, the muscle realizing that, okay, I actually don't need to switch this off as soon, the muscle is safer. So there is another thing then that works kind of in tandem with that. It's called muscle spindles. And what muscle spindles do is they react to overstretch. Okay, so if you're doing plyometrics, you're using muscle spindles to your advantage. So if you rapidly stretch a muscle, it doesn't want to overstretch to where it tears. So what it does is, as the muscle is stretching quickly, it detects that, well, that's too fast a stretch, and that's too quick a stretch. And it will send a signal to your muscle to contract back. So anytime you see someone doing static stretching, and the whole leg is shaking, the muscle spindles are on. They are stretching too far, too fast. So if you are doing static stretching, only go to where you feel the stretch for the first time, but then hold it there for a while. So when I'm holding, say, for my 5 minutes, I'm not going to an area where I'm like the whole muscle is shaking because the muscle spindles are on. I'm going to an area, and if I hold it in a stretch for that long, what can happen is the muscle spindles kind of switch off. And the Golgi tendon organs then tend to switch on after a while to let everything relax off. And then I can move further into the stretch in a safe manner. So it's the longer holds help with those both elements. The Golgi tendon organs seem to switch on after, like, say, 2 minutes to allow things that send a signal to the muscle, to everything to like relax off. And we don't want before that to have the muscle spindles switching on, telling the muscle can contract. So if your leg is shaking when you're stretching, you've gone way too far. Go back, hold it in that position, allow it to relax, and then move a little bit further after a while.
Really great insight there. I think for people to try and understand that your muscle functions are made up of a lot of different types of different functions, and overriding the right one at the right time, but utilizing also the right one at the right time is also really important, which is kind of where you're going with the back positions, mate, isn't it? It's being able to go into different positions, but also being able to go the other way and like actually using everything in our body how it was designed to be used.
That's the thing. It's like, you see, there again, I think sometimes we overly complicate it. I feel like it's the body, if we just go in the way things are designed to move, we're going to have so much better success than, you know, going against that.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, going into stretching and holding your breath and going to a point where it feels like it's going to, you know, rip your muscle, that's a response for a reason. And like, listen to it. It's saying, yeah, hey, can you relax? Can you please breathe a little? And if you can only touch midway to your shin right now, that's okay. Stop trying to rip your hamstrings out the back of your legs by trying to reach your toes.
Just, yeah, exactly. Oh. And not understanding that muscle spindles, it's like, as soon as you let go, your muscles are shortening because that spindle is just telling it. As soon, it's like, I don't know, if you have a toddler or something and it's like, they're not listening. And it's like, you have your hand over their mouth, they're screaming. And you think, well, he's quiet now. It's like, the minute you release that hand, he's going to start screaming. It's like, you have to like, understand what's happening. And then it'll work much more effectively. So you can't just, we can't just ignore. And that's, look, as I said, there's pros and cons of everything, but that's one of the things that I find at the moment. Sometimes we're all arguing the minutiae and we're just forgetting, like, all right, these are just basic concepts of how a body is, like biomechanically, how it's developed. And yes, there can be adaptations to that. Yes, very healthy people can change and we want to develop a capacity and a capability that's there, but let's start with the basics. If someone's lost that function, let's get back the main functions for them and then develop from there.
Love it, mate. Love it. So we could probably keep talking for a long time, but we won't. Let's just try and do a little bit of a summary, mate. That back pain can actually cause a whole lot of other issues going on, not just pain in your back, particularly below the knee injuries. Would you say that's fair?
More hamstring issues, hamstring and hip, because if your pelvis is tilted, the hip kind of gets pushed at the front. I call it runner's hip. So it's not centered in the joint. So if the pelvis isn't here, and then, as you said, Mendiguchi was like, Mendiguchi, I hope I'm saying his name right. That anterior pelvic tilt puts the hamstring on a strain a lot. That can also affect the lower limb. One thing I'll just say about calf issues, from a runner's perspective, if you have calf issues or Achilles issues, my initial thing would not be to do heel drops, heel raises. My initial thing is that the calf, in a lot of, especially long distance runners, the calf and the Achilles is overworked. It's overloaded. That's why it's injured. It's worked too hard. So the issue then is not to work it harder. The issue then is to get the other areas working more. So like single leg deadlift, balance work, glute control, getting the glutes, getting the hamstrings and getting the foot muscles to take pressure off the Achilles and the calf will work 20 times better than just trying to get that stronger. It's like if me and Tom are in a partnership and I'm chilling, I do nothing and he's working super hard. And all when we come to, it's like, okay, Tom's getting a bit burnt out. And our only suggestions are, is like, okay, well, how can we get Tom to be able to handle that workload more? It's like, okay, but first, like, let's get Owen working a bit harder first, get him off his ass, let Tom do what he's doing, and then see if that fixes Tom's issues. And then if it doesn't, we can come back and address some of the issues. But if Tom's doing two men's work, that could be the issue. And it's the same. The calf and the Achilles can be doing too much work, and the issue is to get the rest of the body working more.
Love that. Love that. Particularly around the feet, especially with calf issues, but like you say, hamstrings as well as so important. And it's almost one of those things where it's almost too obvious to be the case. It's like, I've got calf pain. Okay, let's make sure we strengthen and mobilize above and below it. But, it's almost a bit boring.
I know. I just, yeah, it's mad.
Yeah, good. The first hour of your day is the most important if you are dealing with back pain or referral back pain, I would call it, like sciatica or nerve issues. So like you talked about there, the fluid, getting up, getting moving. I think walking is great in the morning anyway. You know, people just getting out and walking first thing before they grab their coffee and go and sit down for the rest of the day is brilliant, mate. And you said there as well, doing some stuff that's mobilizing as well as helping to stabilize in the morning as well, to just get the fluid in your discs moving, but don't work into pain straight away.
Definitely not. Like, backs are really easy. Do the things that feel better and do not do the things that cause you pain.
Brilliant. So easy. And it's absolutely no issues to be in a poor posture as long as you can get out of it.
Yeah, 100%. That's the important thing. Can you like move yourself out of static positions?
Love it. Mate, thank you so much. I think you've made so many things simple and clear there to a problem that is just huge. I see probably two or three runners, cyclists or triathletes a week with some form of, either they're not in pain, but you can almost see that they're going to be soon or poor control that can use this kind of advice from you. Have you got more resources on this? Where can people go to learn a bit more about what you've been talking about, or to get some exercises, or even to try this belt that you've designed and made that's going to help people to learn the correct positions?
Yeah, well, they can go to BackAware Belts, so BackAwareBelt.com. And then if they want to go to BackAwareBelt.com/quiz, I have like a 1-minute quiz on most likely what's the cause of your back pain, and then some suggestions of what to do for that. So that's a free quiz at BackAwareBelt.com/quiz.
Like a decision tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So is it most likely disc? Is it most likely SI joint? Is it most likely facet joint? And then based on that, like here are kind of the key things. Here's why your back pain is most likely caused. And then here's what I would kind of recommend.
Brilliant. And guys, if you're listening and you want us to touch on something else here to do with back pain, or I'm sure, Owen, you've got expertise elsewhere in the body as well with all your accolades, please just email in. Email endurancetinafight.com, and I will then spam Owen with an email to get him back on the podcast, and we can discuss more things.
I would love to be on another one. Yeah, any lower that limb injury, or if they want to talk about like even running training or anything like that. I obviously from my background. I love this, Tom. This is great.
You're
can't
probably
believe how fast it's gone.
Yeah, you're probably the fastest runner we've ever had on the show.
I'm trying to, well, there is very fast podcasters, so I was going to say I'm trying to be the fastest podcaster, but
I should. I think as well that adds potency to what you've been saying, because you're also living it. You are a runner, you're an extremely good runner, and you've also got all the accolades behind you. So yeah, thank you very much, mate. Thanks for coming on. And guys, as I said, please email in if you've got more questions, and we can just do another show. It's no issues at all.
Great. Thanks, guys.